Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yes, indeed. As they say, let's get started. Please welcome my guest for the evening, Dr. Rebecca Foster. Sit back, everyone, because Dr. Rebecca Foster is in the house. Dr. Rebecca Foster is a clairvoyant medium with 36 years of experience in the paranormal field. She is gifted from God and can see past lives, current situations, and future events. She can also speak to animals both living and passed over, see, hear, smell, and feel the other side to convey messages from those who have passed to their loved ones to bring them comfort. Dr. Foster can remote view different locations and walk through places with the intent of communicating with the energies living there. On the cryptid side, Dr. Foster can also talk with Sasquatch, extraterrestrials, fairies, and other elementals. Dr. Foster's gift began at the early age of 4, having the fun of a fairy family that used to keep her company while helping her to sleep. Her personal experiences with the UFOs and extraterrestrials and several experiences with Sasquatch continue and occur telepathically with them from afar. She is a 2-time number one bestseller on Amazon, having written 2 and now 3 books on her abilities and which how we can all connect to spirit. Dr. Foster attributes her entire gifts and abilities from God, without whom she could do none of it. Sit back, everyone. Here we go. Please welcome my guest to the show, Dr. Rebecca Foster. Hello, Dr. Foster, and welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Oh, love having you. What an impressive introduction. And I hope that we'll be able to get to at least most of it today, because if not, we'll have you on in the late future to finish it. But I just think that for the most part, a lot of times people are very curious about where somebody all began. And just like all my other guests, it's not going to be any different with you. So I want you to think back to a time, probably your youngest years that you can recall, where you said to yourself something along the lines of, something seems a little bit different here. Can you go back in time for us and bring us forward?
My earliest experiences that I can actually recall in seeing ghosts and seeing anything started when I was about 4 years old. Mm-hmm. And I spent a lot of time at my grandparents' house, and my great-grandfather lived there as well. Mm-hmm. By the time I was born, he was going blind. Mm. And Right. And I guess I just was, I don't really recall him so much. I just remember his ghost, to tell you the truth, because it was always around. So living, not so much, but he passed. And I was at the time at 4 years old, I was in Montessori. So it was like a preschool. And I came home and my mom said, I wanted you to know, you know, Bampa passed. And I was really upset. I knew what that meant. I knew he was gone. And I went upstairs and I sat in my closet and fell asleep. Okay. And I remember being in their living room and I was watching the paramedics bring him down on a stretcher. And he sat up on the stretcher and he goes, where am I? Where are they taking me? And he got off the stretcher. He never left. He stayed at the house and they took his body out and put him in the stretcher or in the ambulance.
Right.
And I've never forgotten that. Well, he used to just be in the house and I would tell everyone, Bampa's right there. He's sitting in his chair. He's talking. And no, he's not, you know, ghosts aren't real. You're just, she's just distraught because they're great. You know, he died and not at all the case. So when I was older, we, you know, kids, you go outside, you have the floodlights and so forth. And I was riding down the driveway. He was behind, the lights were behind me. Mm-hmm. And I'm driving and I'm going, what the heck? And I'm a little bit older at this point. And there he is standing in the driveway. I was terrified. I'm like, that's a ghost. Bampa's definitely not here. So I had already about 6 or 7 started transitioning out of seeing the ghosties and really kind of paying too much attention to people telling me that it wasn't a real thing. But I knew I was different. I knew ghosts for me were real. I was afraid of things all of the time. And then the really cool experience I had about that same age until I was 10 was, and this, I actually did not talk about it very much. I don't believe in my bio, but I may have, but we had a cottage that we used to go to in Michigan and I was afraid of this cottage. I felt it. It was creepy. There was people there and things there and it was scary. And my parents' room was on the first floor and there was a living room. Neighbors had this gigantic floodlight that went down onto the beach, but it was on all night long. It was blinding. Right. So I slept on the living room couch, opened the curtains so that would be my nightlight. And I developed this friendship with these little wee folk, about this big, little trolls. They're about like this big. Oh. And they would line up on the windowsill and then they would be all multicolored and they would jump over each other and spin and laugh and sing. And they'd go in the window and out of the window. And they were, there was nothing that would hold them from, like they would just boop right through the glass and back out. And they'd do this every single night while I was falling asleep. And again, they stopped showing up when I went there when I was 10. They did not show up. I laid there for hours waiting for them. They didn't come back. I don't know why, but that was the beginning of my adventures with the paranormal, cryptid, elementals, that sort of thing.
Interesting. Let's jump back. I'm going to pick this down or pick it apart just a little bit here.
Yep.
I want to start with it was your grandfather, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so he lived in the house where you were at, or was he living there in his elder years because he needed to be somewhere, obviously, than rather than in like a nursing home? Is that why he was there? Was that his house and you were living with him?
Well, our house was on this street.
Yeah.
And my grandparents' house was on this street. So our backyards met.
Okay.
And that house was built by my great grandparents. And then they all just lived in the house. All generations just lived there.
Okay.
So,
and then when he was passing away, did you say you were in the house at the point that he had passed and then they were bringing him down the stairs, or did you see them take them down the stairs?
Yes.
At his house across the alleyway or street or yard?
No. Okay. So I went to sleep and I jumped right straight through remote view. My energy just teleported and I was in the living room watching all of it happen.
Okay.
And since then I've done it several other times, but that was the one time that opened it all up.
Okay, that still helps there. To clarify that better. Okay, mm-hmm. one of the things that I mentioned in your introduction is that you have this ability to remote view or to go into spaces to either talk with or see or try to understand who might be in that space. And so yeah. I hope that this clarifies this for everybody a little bit more about how she was able to see her grandfather being taken away, unfortunately, at the point that he passed. But I found it interesting too, how you mentioned that he sat up and he was wondering where he was going. And mm-hmm. Confused by that, as they were taking his body out of the house and, you know, unfortunately loading it into the vehicle and all that sort of thing. That's kind of interesting because you hear of people, as I would say, peeling out of their body at death, peeling up and out. You know, I've heard of this before kind of thing. I've watched kind of some of this stuff just on television as an illustration. So that's very interesting that you bring that up. Okay, so now he's going somewhere. And of course, they go through and I don't know, you know, they go through the whole whatever happens after that. And I wonder how long he was, I'm not going to use the word conscious because I'm not even sure that's the right word, was aware from point A to point B to the point of his burial. What are your thoughts on that initial consciousness, or at least what appears to be consciousness, and then at the point of his burial? I presume you were there. Any difference at that point in time that you went through? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, if I'm not even just talking about him, but from any perspective, a lot of times the people, when they pass over, some people don't even know they've died, their physical body. They're just simply existing as they would in a residual fashion. Okay. So with him, he's still in the house. He just never left the house, nor has my great grandmother, my father, my grandmother's always there. So sometimes people will cling to a property and people ask, well, if they can go to heaven, why did they stay back here? And it's because, and they've said this, it's because they don't want to go up and be redispersed and born again. And they don't want to have to try to find one another. When people enjoy their life or where they're at, they will choose to stay behind because they think, you know what? I know if I go back up there, I'm going to have to come back down as someone else, as a child. Yeah. And I don't want to. I don't want to risk losing these people. So they maintain that still, that consciousness of that human aspect. They're limited, though, to the knowledge that they have on a celestial or heavenly level. Is if they were to pass through the light and go to heaven, that whole thing is revealed, all of their past lives and how they've connected to one another. And so in this life right now, they are all still who they were on a human level to each other in the home. And it's interesting too, because in relation to what you're saying, as far as consciousness goes, my grandfather would come home, not my great-grandfather, my great-grandfather, my grandfather, my father's father. He would get home at 6 o'clock every night. And if you're in the living room at 6 o'clock, you can hear the kitchen door like rattles and you can hear it knock. And okay, grandpa's home. My great-grandmother Martha, she would be cooking. You can hear her in the pantry. You can see her in the break front in her skirt and waist down. So consciousness, it goes on. It continues on. And I'm not sure as far as if somebody chooses to stay here, I guess the whole clarification would be their body. He's in the house. The body is in the graveyard. He's not paying any attention to that. But people who have passed over and gone to the light, they will attend their funeral. Mm-hmm. They will hang out with family. They will go to the service, the wake. They are not limited by space. And a lot of times I'll be in a funeral home or at a wake and I'll be like, oh, hi, how you doing? And boop, they're right there. Mm-hmm. Or they'll comment on the flowers, or they'll comment on how nice they look. They'll comment on the guests. So once you move on to the light, you're not limited by space and time.
Interesting. I'm just thinking about my father. He passed away about 6 years ago or so, maybe going on seven. And I know that he had a very strong attachment to his childhood property that his, would be my great grandparents would have built. Huh? back in the day. And what happened with him, and it was reported by my brother, I was teaching at the time, 600 miles away. And I, you know, you just can't jump in the car when you're a college professor and be there every minute. It was a very difficult situation for me because I knew that when this happened, he would probably, you know, I wouldn't be there. But anyway, so one really weird thing happened as I was teaching. My students started to panic and they were pointing at the screen behind me, which never malfunctioned before. And it started to slowly rise behind me. And I didn't notice it because it was that whisper quiet. And normally if it's going to malfunction, it could go up really fast or make a lot of, you know, noise. I haunted my classroom anyway, but I knew when that went up, I knew that that was a sign for me. It was in my gut that my dad had just probably passed away or he was being very close to passing away. And then I had to sit there and try and calm my students down a little bit and make light of it because, you know, what are you going to say to your students? Oh, my dad just died, you know, that kind of thing. But when I was, while this was going on, my brother was in this, I guess, hospice nursing home where he was at the time. And he was standing out in the lobby and there was a gentleman, an older man whose chin was literally down to his lap, you know, how they're bent over sometimes in their wheelchairs. And he was just very out of it. And at the point that my dad had passed away in the room, this gentleman, apparently he was standing by a window or a door. And I'm going to ask you about this in just a second. He was standing by a window or a door. And all of a sudden, the man, just out of nowhere, this elderly man lifted himself up, started smiling profusely and waving at my brother as if he knew who the heck he was. And I said to my brother, he tried to go into this man's body momentarily, or the man noticed he was leaving through the window or the door, my father's soul, or for whatever reason, and was just basically giving him a send-off. But it was probably, I guess he said, the most confusing moment of his life. So I had a doctor on my show a couple of years ago, and I just asked, have you ever had a situation where somebody who had just passed has attempted to take over somebody else's body? And he said, I've only had 3 cases. And I said, well, potentially now you might have 4. So now I'm going to bring this right back to you, Dr. Foster. What are your thoughts about dying individuals who are either wanting to hang around for very territorial or private reasons, or taking over somebody else's body until they recognize that it's kind of a pointless effort? I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, okay. I'm going to speak to what I know. And after 36 years of doing this, I have never seen anyone try to take someone else's body over, not even mine. And I'm always a willing subject. Mm-hmm. So I've never had that. But when you were speaking, what I saw that man doing was just the desire in all of his soul to leave. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't. He was still, it's not his time, but he did see your father leaving. And as that portal opens, you're welcomed. It's a welcome party. It is people that you've known and love. It's a bright light and it's music and they're having a party for you. I mean, mm-hmm. it is essentially a welcome home party from a long time away. And that man, when he looked up and waved, that was more like, don't forget me, I'm still here. Mm-hmm. And just wanting so badly to go as well, like, hey, and obviously not being able to, it wasn't his time. Yeah. But that is why I was like, oh my gosh, that's so sad. This poor guy is like, his veil is already lifting and he's obviously in and out of his own consciousness, probably with a little bit of either Alzheimer's or dementia in that mm-hmm. moment. And once that hits, that veil lifts anyway, and they see and talk to everyone. So the fact that he saw that and reacted so hopefully is sad, mm-hmm. but it wasn't his time. But it seems that that glory, that light is just so glorified. And yeah. That's what it looks like. I can see your, is this your brother you said that is here?
My brother that was standing next to the window and the door. He's my younger brother.
So he was standing next to the window and the door. Mm-hmm. This is your father. Mm-hmm. But this is like an uncle or somebody that's coming through and he's like, hey, buddy. And he's a little bit taller than your dad. And he comes up and he puts his arm around him and smacks him on the back. And your father looks at your brother. Your brother is not paying any attention. Obviously, he's watching this guy like, what's he? Me? Mm-hmm. He's trying to figure out who he's waving at. Yeah. The man's vision just wasn't even good enough, to make out your brother in the first place. Mm-hmm. From his perspective, everything is just a bright light that he knows. He hears that symphony. And I love that. It's a beautiful visual. I'm sure that he would have passed probably shortly after that.
Yeah. Well, judging from the way it sounded, I'm surprised he was able to even lift himself off the, you know, from his lap. And so, my dad did come to visit me about a couple months later. And because there was a, I don't know if you've ever had this, but sometimes people have these particular smells that not necessarily engulf them, but in my case, it was kind of an engulfing smell. We lived on a farm and there's a very specific smell that came from farm clothing, of course, obviously, when you come from the barn. And I was still in Indiana and I knew I didn't live near any active farms. It was something that came out of nowhere. And then I think he tried to call me too on the telephone, but with all the scammers out there and everything, nobody really picks up their phone anymore unless they know who's calling. But, and then there's signs. What are your thoughts about signs? Let's talk about signs a little bit now that I think about it. What are your thoughts about that?
I think everybody should pay more attention to signs. I think that everyone that partially a communication between yourself and your guides, mm-hmm. between you and God, between those that love you, pennies, feathers, and dimes out of nowhere at your toes, right. Collect them and stick them in your shoe and say, thank you very much. I look like a fiend half the time. I'll be like, oh, there's a penny at your foot. Is that yours? Did you drop it? Because if not, I saw it first. And I will put that, my shoes all jingle from the change. Your guides will talk to you. They'll send you numerical messages, 1111, 111, 511, 2223. You know, if you're seeing something in a recurring pattern, but I don't even say recurring anymore as much as, because sometimes it takes that for people to recognize it. To show them something repeatedly, like that's odd. I saw this several times, but I have learned that I don't care if you're driving, mm-hmm. whatever you're doing, if you are motivated, I guess, to mm-hmm. look at something and there's a number there, you look it up. What does this angel number mean? There are so many, and the way that they tie and bind together can have so many different meanings, and it'll help answer questions in that moment. The more you pay attention to them, the more they give you.
There's
no such thing as a coincidence.
It used to be dimes for me at first, but now it's quarters. I mean, I did ask for, there's a little bit of inflation going on out here.
And a coin shortage.
I had a coin shortage. Yeah. No, it's just been, I do notice that stuff and I'm like, interesting. I wonder what the message is today. Or my sister, she found a pheasant feather by her car door, which came out of nowhere when she came out of a grocery store. And of course, my dad was big into pheasant hunting, and I don't know where it came from. Yeah. And so she said, I think he made a visit. And I said, I don't think he's ever left. So I really don't think my dad has gone anywhere, because something he really didn't want to leave to begin with. So that's it's kind of interesting. Now, you mentioned before that there are times when you go into some of these funerals and stuff and people are, you can see them, or do they ever approach you, and I'm talking these apparitions, do they ever approach you and try to talk to you?
Absolutely. Yes. But it's not a time or a place for it. I will, if something like that ever happens, it's, of course, I'm there. I know the person. I'm not just going to any random funeral or wake. So the people that are there are just, they'll contact, did you see so-and-so? Yes. Do you want to hear about it? Because it's a lot of times it's just too soon. Yeah. And the information that they give, though, is comforting, because a lot of times people want to know. So if I'm there, they already know that I am looking for or communicating with someone within the service, you know, within the service situation.
So, you know, one of the things I always try to emphasize to people, and I think they forget, is that when someone is passing away, even if they're in a coma or something that looks very similar to a coma, to be very careful about negative words and negativity and
they
all
hear
of that.
Everything.
Yeah, because they hear everything. And it makes me sick sometimes, even if people are very upset with somebody, that they really shouldn't do unto others as you would expect done back to you. Yeah. Laying there. Do you want people Yep. sitting there talking smack? You know, that's one of my biggest pet peeves of Yes. people just being, I don't use the word ignorant or just out of the moment, but it is it's bothering. So yeah, that's one thing. Do you think that, or what have been your impressions about, well, does a period of time go by when, like, for example, I guess I'll use your grandpa. Do you think he's still at the house? Do you think there's yeah. a period of time when he says, well, I've had my fill. I think I'm just going to kind of move on from here. What are your thoughts about that?
No, I don't think it's going to happen. I've already tried to send them on their way. They won't go. Mm. They're very happy in the house. I actually feel bad. We had to sell the house to help take care of my grandmother. And I was sleeping. The gentleman, it was a young guy who bought the house. And I was sleeping. And my grandmother came and said, he is tearing the house apart. And I went, oh no. So I got a hold of the neighbor. I'm like, Joe, what is the guy doing to the house? My grandmother said, they are angry. They are mad. He goes, oh, he's taking a bedroom out. And I went, what? Why? He's opened up the master bedroom into the death room. It's the room where it was an extra bedroom for the most part. But if you were dying, that's where you went, was this room. Yeah. And they cut this wall out and made it one big room. And I said, my grandparents, they're not happy. They're very mad. And I don't know what they did to wreak havoc, because I know that prior to that, my brother and his wife lived in the house as well. And they did some upgrading and changing around of a few things. And the energies were not happy. And if there were bad people in the house mm-hmm. or people with negative yep. energy, mm-hmm. they would mirror that almost to get rid of them. And I felt badly, because it was always such a great house. But I'll tell you the truth, I don't know if I'd ever live in it now. I don't know. It was I'd love to go back and say, hey, you guys still here, and walk through. But I think the new owner, because that guy sold,
yeah
now he took a huge hit too. So I wonder why he would sell the house. It's such a loss, because he took about $150,000 loss and sold the house after he fixed it up. Mm. So there's a new kid in the house now.
Interesting. I had the same situation with my grandparents' house. But the first kid ran out of money in trying to make changes to it. I was actually attacked in their house, actually, by an unseen force at around my age of 9 to like 13, 14, something like that. And I heard chattering in that house. Well, the story with that house is that, and then I learned this along the way, a long time ago, back in 18, like 98 or even before, my grandparents took over the house. A woman lived there, and she might have been either widowed or I doubt she lived there by herself. She was probably widowed at the time, but a fire had started in the porch kitchen area, and whatever happened there, she succumbed to it. And so she died in that, in that space. And then we didn't know anything about this for years after, but I had a lot of kids siblings in my family, and we all felt weirded out going into that house and being there by ourselves. Well, yeah. And so I was attacked in a room upstairs, and could never shake my fear of it. But you brought up a really good thought here that I was going to ask you about. And just to give clarification, I met Dr. Foster at a recent conference out in Vernal, Utah. And One of the things that someone did bring up while I was watching your talk was, if the house is
making sure my,
Looking good. Sure. Except your body parts are all over the place. There you go.
I was making sure that, my computer looks like it just, hold on one second. I just,
okay.
Make sure I'm not disconnected.
She looks good, but due to technical difficulties.
Well, I wanted to make sure because my cord fell and I wanted to make sure it didn't disconnect my, it was something else. So I want to make sure we did not fall apart while you were talking.
No, you're good. Sometimes I've gone through an entire show like the one that's running right now with a guest where my face was completely blurred the entire time. So I don't usually look at myself when we have these shows, but I always find it interesting in the least to look at them and watch them afterwards and go, oh, okay. You know, no, you're fine. You're great. And I don't look at you either, by the way, to all of my listeners and my viewers. I don't look at her and I don't look at myself. I just look right into the camera. But all right. So here's my question now. So at the conference, someone brought up while you're giving your talk, something to the effect that if a house is completely burned down and even the property sold, and in my case, it's the father's childhood property and all that. Yep. Burned down to the ground, watched every morsel of it go down, including the barn. And this is like 120-year-old property out in the rural area. The question that was asked at the conference was, what then? Do you think that they still exist at all at that property if they want to be there? Or what do you think happens then?
Sometimes they stay tied to the land. Sometimes an energy is there. Now, the thing is this, it's different. If you're talking an active energy, you're an active haunting. A lot of times it can be on the property. Native American land is one of those as an example. They don't leave the land for a lot. It's tied there to that property. Mm-hmm. For instance, then if you're talking about a house, mm-hmm. I was at a house today, as a matter of fact, I'll use it as an example. Mm-hmm. So they had a lot of activity. I went to check the place out, mm-hmm. come to find out that their house and a lot of the subdivision was built on top of a cemetery, poltergeist style, where they didn't remove all of the graves. They just took the headstones.
Right.
And these people are still it's not like they lived on the land, but they're tied to the land. Their energy is still tied, like they're upset. And you'd think, why would they be upset? It's just their body. But a lot of times it's because they do stay tied to stuff and to the land itself. I don't think it's just his property. The lady of the house that lived there, she doesn't even realize she's gone. And she is residually walking through and doing her thing. The gentleman of the house stayed because he didn't want to leave without his wife, but she doesn't know she's gone. So I was like, okay, Albert, we need to get you to go in and tell Ethel that she's passed over. I said, and you two need to have something that'll bring her to the table, like have crumpets and tea or bring out bread and butter or make it a table situation so that you're able to speak with her and say you've passed over. And then Albert might be able to bring his wife to heaven if they so choose. Mm-hmm. Or if you're welcome, then they want to stay and you're okay with it, then fine. But people will stay for a lot of reasons. They just don't want to leave their land. And it doesn't matter if some place is burned down, if you build something on top of it, they will continue on that property. People ask, well, your house is haunted. Well, it's a brand new house. We just built on it. But what was here before that? Was it a farmland? The land that we're on right now, there's something wrong with it. There's something going on this land. And it makes me look back at the gentleman who used to own this farmland a long time ago. So they can get territorial about it. It's their property. They don't want people on it. And so, and again, if you're talking ghosts, okay. Most of the time, ghosts will stay. People are always worried about, oh, I don't want to bring something home with me. I'm afraid of bringing it home. Mm. Most of the time, a ghost that wants to be where it's at stays where it's at. Mm. Most of the time. Negative energies, dark angelic beings, those can go anywhere. Demonic things are usually tied to a portal or a dimensional opening. They're tied to something on a property that someone has opened and brought them through. So they can't really just leave, except they can attach to you and go home with you. They can torment you. They can make you have horrible dreams. But most of the time, it's like a rubber band. You stretch them. They can only hang on long enough and boom, they're sucked back. It'll last 2 or 3 weeks and it goes away. But by this time, some people are so freaked out about it, they're losing their faith. And once you lose your faith and they get in your head, they may stick around a lot longer. I've had children leave places, though, ghosty children who have attached to me and stayed for a few years. It just depends on their motive and what they really, really want. So
yeah, I remember watching your the video you showed. I can't remember the kid's name. You brought this kid home.
Gabriel,
yes. I thought what was interesting, and just to give people kind of a mini recap, I believe I was watching, it was your son's bed or something. Yes. And then all of a sudden you could literally see the image of this child or this ghosty child crawl over him or just going behind him. Or that's what
pulled the blanket up.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then leapfrogged off the bed.
Yeah, that I remember seeing. And I thought that was actually really good, you know, a good capture. Did you have an infrared camera just shoot that in general? Yep. Did you have a special camera?
No, I just had infrared and night vision. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the cheapest stuff is sometimes the best.
It is.
It might be a little grainy here and there, but those little granules that picks up really does help define their outlines. Because without that cheap camera, I don't think I would have been able to really catch his head and his face and the blanket up. And then he goes back down and you can see his entire body. I'm like, this is a legit fantastic capture of a little boy physically harassing my son, who is yelling, "Stop it, leave me alone," every night. And yeah. And so Gabriel was little. He also had a little bit of I think he was Down syndrome, so he was fine. He was playful, but always at night.
Yeah.
And he always harassed the kids, but a loving little boy. He was just fantastic.
Yeah. I still am I'm a professional photographer. And a lot of times what people don't realize when they say, well, why did your phone or your camera capture that, but mine did not? Well, there's some reasons behind that too. Number one, we're talking filters, and there's some gizmos or whatever however the camera lens is made or what they have or do not have in that camera lens. That's why some people can pick up on some things and why others have not. Now, I have, ever since, yes, I've had plenty of poltergeist activity. I've haunted 3 homes. I believe some of this stuff came home with me, or I brought it up from whatever. But I've had my fair share of ghostly activity in my life. But one of the things is I did get an infrared camera. Started because we were getting stuff like the door opening and all kinds of weird stuff was happening. And so, anyway, but you know, the thing is I've yet to capture like I did see a black wisp, I guess, go across the hallway about, you know, a few months back, probably about 2 feet high. And I captured it just with my eyes really quickly. And which didn't surprise me. And it went into my husband's office, so I didn't care. But, you know, it's just kind of like, yeah, I know, the love of a wife. Oh, I went into your office. I don't care. Now, if it went into my office, you know. But, you know, you've also talked about your association with also being able to make contact in some way with you had Sasquatch as you mentioned, and elementals and stuff like that.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about when this all began or how you got into that, because that's kind of that's another factor of all of this combined. So,
all right. So again, going back, you know, the little people, the little trolls, that was a long time. Every summer, every winter, they were there. That was for many years. When I was, truly after my experience with all of these different cryptids and elementals with ETs, they mark people. Hmm. They know who you are. They know where you are. They will communicate with you. They know if your intentions are good and pure, or if you have some motive, an agenda, and they will steer clear of you if that's the case. So when I was 8 years old, my parents had gotten divorced and I was living in Orland Park, Illinois. Little did I know that that was also like the Mothman capital. I didn't know that. Yeah. So I'm standing on the back balcony and looking across that we were the first apartment building in the Orland Park area. Mm-hmm. And then there was the mall. That was it. The rest was cornfields. Well, beyond the cornfield was this thing, a corporation called Andrew Corporation. And it was a satellite dish corp. Well, at least that's what I thought it was. It was mm-hmm. satellite dishes all over the place. And I'm standing out there with my brother and I was like, look at that. And there was a spaceship and it was a UFO. It was circular. Mm-hmm. And the bottom, it had all the way around the center. The lights just did this all the way around it. Mm-hmm. And we stood there and we watched it for, I can't tell you how long. And I went, holy cow, let me go get mom. Mm-hmm. And so I ran in and I'm like, you guys have to come look. There is a spaceship over the field right here. You have to come look. And by the time I got her disbelieving butt back there, it was gone. But shortly after that, what I thought were ghosts originally woke me up about 4:30 in the morning. I was sleeping on the top bunk. No reason at all. I sit up and I look at the end of my bed and in the hallway, there is a little person and then a little person a little bit shorter. Their arms are around each other and they just looked at me and they went and they waved. And I was like, what? And I was, I'm awake. I'm sitting up in bed right now. I'm awake. And they stood there and just stood there. They didn't move. They didn't fluctuate. They just stood there. So I wasn't afraid. I wasn't nervous. Who's not afraid? You know, you're young. You're 8 or 9 years old. I just was like, okay, well, I'm awake. I know what I see. I'm going back to bed. Mm-hmm. And I laid back down and I laid there and went, I don't know what to do. And I sat up and they were gone. Mm-hmm. And so there was that first experience with the aliens, with the UFO, and then with this alien couple in my stupid apartment. And they had to know I was just a non-threatening thing.
Right.
So that's how that started. And then because I knew that extraterrestrials existed, I also, I don't even know why, I knew there were Bigfoot and I knew it. I kept insisting they're alive. They're real. And I did not get any absolute chances until a few years ago where I may have when I was younger. I mean, when I was really little, I woke up all the time to a giganto angel in my room, just glowing white, huge angels in my room. Hmm. But this is the stuff that I just grew up doing. So it wasn't weird to me. It just wasn't weird. And I got a chance to go out squatching. And the thing was I was actually going to a gallery. Mm-hmm. Not a gallery. I was going to an investigation.
Yeah.
And there was a gentleman there that I did not know, but I met. And he said, when we're done with this, can I ask you a question? And I was like, sure, that's fine. So we were outside. It's midnight. Yeah. He goes, I have a question. And I went, yes, they're real. And he goes, what are you talking about? And I'm like, you're Bigfoot. And he's like, what? And then what happens is this is what I was trying to say at the beginning, where they leave a mark on you.
Yeah.
I'm able to read people, dogs, anything that you connect with, I can connect with through you. And so I took a moment and I was able to find these Bigfoot where they were and then explain by them what was going on. And then they showed me around with a remote view what he wanted to hear. So I was able to prove to him where they were, what they were doing, what they've done where he's concerned. Mm-hmm. And then they're explaining their family units mm-hmm. and how they fluctuate in areas based on migrations for unions within families because they do not, they pair up externally. So there's no inbreeding. Mm-hmm. And then they also travel for breeding and for mating purposes. Mm-hmm. Especially right now, there's a lot of logging going on. There's a lot of stuff that's pushing them out of their developments and out of their areas. And humans are just destroying. If I won that $1 billion, I could bet your boopy I'd be buying up so much treed land and never building on it just so that they'd have a sanctuary.
Yeah.
And so that's how that started. But I've had in-person encounters with them as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Which state?
Ohio.
Ohio. Mm-hmm. I should have guessed because it seems like there's a lot of activity in Ohio. I mean, there's some in Minnesota, upper Minnesota.
Minnesota, upper Wisconsin along Superior. Yes. Yep.
Anything with a really thick, from what I know, thick forested type area. Down in southern Indiana, where I used to live, I mean, there is a grouping of them down there too. I talked with some ladies here who like to squatch. They're known as the squatchers, and they've gone down there, which was surprising to me, but not surprising anymore because, again, wooded, thick areas, sometimes remote.
Kentucky as well.
Oh, yeah. Yes, of course. Kentucky, and then there's a part of Tennessee, I think, as well.
Yes.
So
Alaska.
Mm-hmm. My question to you is, you said you actually have physically seen a Bigfoot. What happened?
Okay. So the first time that it happened, we were in Ohio and it was myself. It was for a creature event out there for Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And it was myself and Maddie. I can tell you names like Ronnie LeBlanc.
Ronnie LeBlanc,
mm-hmm. myself and Maddie Blake. And we were walking a frontage road along a lake. We didn't have cameras. We didn't have phones. We had nothing on us. We were walking blindly. The only thing Maddie had a recording device, and he had been recording everything we were doing that night. And we got bluff charged down the hill, and Ronnie and I, Jeff, our friend Jeff, he was way ahead of us on this road, and this thing ran down and landed in front of him, and he turned around and yelled, "Run!" And Maddie and Ronnie and I turned around and we ran. And by the time we realized we outran Jeff, we didn't know if he was alive. We were laughing so hard. It was one of the most hysterical moments of my life. We still talk about it. We're like, Jeff almost died.
Oh, well, yeah. poor guy. Yeah. He needs to learn how to run faster next time. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So this thing was huge. And we went in for the night after that. We were done for. It was just such a hysterical time. And so the next night, Ronnie and Maddie had to leave early the next morning. So that day we finished, Jeff and I went back by ourselves. Again, no cameras, no phones, no nothing, no flashlights. We're just going by the moon. And we're walking. And I said, okay, this is where you were charged last night. Let's stop. And let's get it to interact with us because he's right here. So I said, let's just throw little pebbles at each other. So we were just sitting there like hopscotching, you know, little pebbles back and forth at one another. And we're laughing and talking. And then I looked up and the cones, the way the light was reflecting in my eyes, picked him up over here. And I went, holy cow. And he wasn't there a moment ago. And I went, Jeff, turn around and look right there. What do you see? And he's like, oh my God, it's in the street. And I was like, it's like 11 feet tall. And we're both frozen now. We've just pretty much gotten into the cage with an elephant. And when you summon an elephant, what do? So we have nothing. And I'm not trying to catch it. I'm not trying to prove its existence. Now I'm going, what do we do?
Right.
And as we're continuing to do this, I'm like, is it moving? It's coming. It's coming closer. This thing just, it didn't do this. It went like this. That's all it did. It like floated. It did not move. It like did this towards us. And I went, it's coming. It's coming closer. We have to get out of here. So we got up and we turned around and Jeff goes, turn your back to it. God. We walked out, heads down, looking at the road in like this submissive, we are not going to do anything. We're just leaving. And you get in this moment and you think, this is the opportunity of a lifetime,
right,
to really communicate with this thing. And we both 100% chickened out. But we were asked, we told Ronnie and Maddie about it, and they said, can you guys draw something up for us? So by this time, we're both at home.
Right.
And we're like, yeah, sure. So both of us drew a picture of what we each saw. It was identical.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, good. I'm not nuts. I saw this. We saw the same thing. It was identical to what we both saw. There was that. But the cool thing is they're super telepathic.
Mm-hmm.
They are not apes. They are not monkeys. If you get in a cage with a gorilla, it will tear you apart.
Yeah.
It is a humanoid. It has a conscience. It can think. It is logical. It makes sense of things. It's mm-hmm. super intelligent, but it's telepathic. And that night I was in one end of the cabin in a room by myself. And then the guys were all in another end in a bunked area. And I had a window up against my head, and I woke up the next day and I went, you guys, he came to me last night. He was at the window last night, and he woke me up through my dream. You know, just as you're mm-hmm. waking, there is that twilight where right. energies will come through it that have passed over and mm-hmm. so forth. He came through and he was like this. And I was like, holy crap, he's at my head. So he was definitely checking us out. You're at a point where you're exhilarated and terrified all at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. Amazing experience.
You know,
I do have another one for you too, if you want to
lay it on. Yep. Lay it on me.
Okay. This will be last. I'll give this to you. This is super cool though. So I met this gentleman and his husband a few years ago at a ParaUnity event. We get done. He comes up, they come up to me and we're talking. And I went, again, I can read people's energy. I went, you have Squatchies in your property. He goes, I do. I said, you've got a beautiful Squatchie on your property. He loves you. And we're just talking. He goes, anytime, come on down. They're in the forest behind us. They watch TV with us. They're always up in the windows. Mm-hmm. We feed them. Oh my gosh. I have yet to make it. It's down Southern Illinois.
Mm.
So time goes by, boop, boop, boop. We don't really talk that much, but we follow each other as much as we can on Facebook.
Mm.
And that's about it. Well, I get this message one day while I'm busy, and it's his Squatch. And he goes, where is he at? And I went, well, I don't know. I'm here. He's there. I'll find out. I don't know where he's at. He was worried. So I messaged and I said, hey, where are you at? Well, he goes, I had a heart attack. I'm in the hospital for the last week. And I went, well, your big dude in the backyard is really worried about you. You guys had better show face or do something. And he goes, are you kidding? And I said, no, how would I know you had a heart attack? It's not like you've posted that on Facebook. I said, go home. And when you get home, go out and make sure he knows you're okay. Hmm. That's the relationships they build with people. When they trust you,
mm-hmm.
they will let their children around you. They will let their families around you. Mm-hmm. And you just have to be careful. You have to be right. kind, pure. You cannot try to set up secret cameras to catch, because they will see that. They know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty amazing.
You know, I'm thinking about all kinds of scenarios and talking to people who have either seen one or actually was 2 inches away from one. Literally all kinds of things are going through my head right now, including the gentleman who was out on his property and in his house, and one was approaching the door of his house, and he decided to take his shotgun and shoot at it. Well, it went poof. So as soon as he shot at it, it went poof. There was nothing left. Yeah, it was. And so people have always, they're wondering what these things are, if there's some kind of an energy that can show up and then go invisible, or whatever yes. the case may be. But there's not often a lot of evidence left regarding, I mean, sure, you might get some tracks. And depending on where you're at, they can have different temperaments. And depending on, like, the one that I'm thinking of right now is this woman who ended up, she was UFO watching, and she was following this UFO thing, and she went on a remote road, and she got a flat tire, and then she needed more juice on her phone, and she needed more whatever, so she started walking, and so then she laid down, she was tired, and then she thought it was a cougar that was sniffing at her, but it wasn't a cougar, it was actually a, I think she described it more like a 7, 8, 9 foot Sasquatch. And she got up, and she thought she was going to scare away this cougar because it was either her or it, which wasn't there anyway. She came 2 inches face to face with an actual Sasquatch. Well, the thing is that she went up and went, ah, and he, this thing, whether it was a he, she, or it, looked down and kind of went, ugh, and then took off running into the forest. Didn't hurt her, didn't touch her, was just as afraid as she was. And off it went and went. Now, I don't know how long it took for the people to come and find her after that and all that. But if I was face to face with something like that, I probably would turn around and run back to my car with the flat tire and just figure out how to stay put. But so it's kind of interesting. So a moment ago, okay, he shoots and it goes poof. What is this, a being that goes in and out of a portal, or what is happening here? What are your thoughts?
That's exactly my thought. They're super aligned. The same telepathic energy that I get from ETs is their ability to move through. I believe they're interdimensional, just the same. And they also cloak. And the reason I say cloaking is because they can be standing right in front of you, but you're not going to see them because they seriously camouflage. My friend Jeff took a picture outside the window as we were leaving towards the lake, and he showed it to me. And I said, did you look at this picture? And he said, why? And I said, there's a Squatchy right there. Mm. He's right there. Look at his face, but he's cloaked. Mm. Like you could see through him. Mm. And when we were out that night too, I said to Ronnie, he's right here. If you watch, you'll watch him run between these trees. I'm telling you, just watch. And we have this all recorded, and all of a sudden, loop, he like, you didn't hear him. No sound. We're talking dry leaves, crunchy leaves. He just went floop, right between those. And what you'll also find when you're out with Squatches, there's fairy. So fae are all around Squatches. And blue lights. So you'll get sparkly blue lights and orbs every time that you'll see. They'll just be floating. They're, because they're interdimensional. You cannot convince me otherwise. They're not human. Like they're not of the earth the way that we are in that. They are so much more on a higher vibration and frequency than humans are.
Right. The Squatch girls, they're called the She Squatchers. It was one of the gals I interviewed a couple of years ago, and she talked about the blue light and blue orbs that you would see. And I said, is there an association between those blue orbs and lights and the Sasquatch Bigfoot as we know it? And she said, I believe there is, but she's also brought up the other thing, which is confusing. She said, yeah, sometimes they will, we're in northern Minnesota, there's a lot of marshland, and then there's a lot of thick trees. Okay, so she's talking about some of the areas where no one could humanly really walk into a marsh because it's like quicksand, and then you'll sink, right? But she's often seen these blue lights go down into the marsh, like into the ground, like underneath the soil or into the marsh muck or whatever you want to call it. And I said, well, isn't that interesting? She says, yeah, I have a feeling they kind of live underneath that. And I'm like, they live underneath that? I mean, not in the way that you and I live. You know, we need air to breathe and water to drink and all this sort of thing. And I begin to wonder sometimes what on earth these things actually exist on. Some go, well, if there's bears, they eat the same thing as bears. Then I hear, well, if there's deer, they love to eat deer. And so I'm hearing all these different reports on what Squatches like to also eat. What are your thoughts on how they grow to be their size? And what do you think? I mean, I have no idea what to think about that.
All right. Well, let's make sense of this. So gorillas, all they eat is vegetables, and they're muscular and huge and thick and very little fat. And all they do is eat vegetables and fruit. They're very little meat of any kind, but when you're in Squatch area, when there's Bigfoot around, there are no animals, none. There are no, you are in the middle of the woods, mm-hmm. and there aren't squirrels. There's no chipmunks. There's no bunnies. There's no deer. There's nothing.
Right.
Nothing. And then if you're at night, everything goes quiet. Yep. Silence.
Silent.
The only thing that they do kind of seem that follows them are coyotes. So when they move and they make noise and they do their thing, then the coyotes will follow suit with the yips and the screaming. So every time I hear coyotes, I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Cool. Really interesting.
Yeah, God. Exactly.
So out of all of the, as we go into a wrap up, out of all of the different things that you do, why don't I have you tell the listeners and the viewers a little bit about what you do really well or what you do right now, and especially when it involves all these things, just to kind of enlighten them a little bit about where you think your gifts have come from and how you're able to make these connections with all sorts of different type of phenomena and you name it. So where on earth do you take it from there, huh?
Well, I'm actually living like the best life doing this. I couldn't do life any other way that I'm doing it. It's just who I am. And when I was four, back mm-hmm. to four, my grandfather's dog bit me in the face and created a huge infection. I went blind for a little while with that infection. And that's where I kind of think it all kind of started back was touching the veil and giving, you know, having them open me back up to things that were unknown after birth.
Yeah.
And I believe that it is truly a gift from God. My Father in heaven, I've prayed to him so many times to have it taken away. He refuses. He just makes it stronger. It tells me to buckle up. And so when people ask me what my purpose is, what am I supposed to be doing? My doctorate, my work as this, it all ties into my true desire to save people and to help people and to provide them with comfort and with strength to get through another day, to help people who are dealing with their own problems, with addiction, with suicide, with things that are never ending trying to take us out of this world.
Yeah.
And that is that's what I love doing. It's the ghosts and everything else that make it a bonus. You know, that's the bonus. But my true calling and desire is to serve God and to help people here who are alive, keep them that way.
Wow. Well, and I hope that people will look you up and they will reach out, especially if they're in need or if they have something that they want to ask you about. And so give us a little bit of an idea as to how people can find you.
My website is godstool.com, and that's got all of the links to reach me, to message, to call, to email. And they should just say they saw me here. And I really try to respond quickly.
We will have you back. And again, thank you so much for being on the show today and for all this. Very, very interesting. So thanks again.
Thank you.